Well, good evening. You're listening to Reading the Classics, and I'm Rebecca, your host for this evening. Tonight, we'll most likely be finishing up Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which we've been reading for the last month or so as a staff. It's been a wild adventure, and if you've missed any episodes of this reading, KRBD has wonderfully posted all of our Reading the Classics episodes for your listening delight on its website, krbd.org. So let's begin where we left off last week with the Knave of Hearts on trial for a tart burglary and the King and Queen of Hearts interrogating witnesses as we pick back up in Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Just at this moment, Alice felt a very curious sensation, which puzzled her a good deal until she made out what it was. She was beginning to grow larger again, and she thought at first she would get up and leave the court, but on second thoughts, she decided to remain where she was as long as there was room for her. "I wish you wouldn't squeeze so," said the Dormouse, who was sitting next to her. "I can barely breathe." "I can't help it," said Alice very meekly. "I'm growing." "You've no right to grow here," said the Dormouse. "Don't talk nonsense," said Alice more boldly. "You know that you're growing too." "Yes, but I grow at a reasonable pace," said the Dormouse, "not in that ridiculous fashion." And he got up very sulkily and crossed over to the other side of the court. All this time, the Queen had never left off staring at the Hatter, and just as the Dormouse crossed the court, she said to one of the officers of the court, "Bring me the list of the singers in the last concert," on which the wretched Hatter trembled so that he shook both his shoes off. "Give your evidence," the King repeated angrily, "or I'll have you executed, whether you're nervous or not." "I'm a poor man, Your Majesty," the Hatter began in a trembling voice. "And I hadn't but just begun my tea, not above a week or so, and what with the bread and butter getting so thin, and the twinkling of the tea."
"The twinkling of the what?" said the King.
"It began with the tea," the Hatter replied. "Of course twinkling begins with a tea," said the King sharply. "Do you take me for a dunce? Go on." "I'm a poor man," the Hatter went on, "and most things twinkled after that. Only the March Hare said—"
"I didn't," the March Hare interrupted in a great hurry.
"You did," said the Hatter.
"I deny it," said the March Hare.
"He denies it," said the King. "Leave out that part."
"Well, at any rate, the Dormouse said," the Hatter went on, looking anxiously round to see if he would deny it too, but the Dormouse denied nothing, being fast asleep. "After that," continued the Hatter, "I cut some more bread and butter."
"But what did the Dormouse say?" one of the jury asked.
"That I can't remember," said the Hatter.
"You must remember," remarked the King, "or I'll have you executed."
The miserable Hatter dropped his teacup and bread and butter and went down on one knee. "I'm a poor man, Your Majesty," he began.
"You're a very poor speaker," said the King.
Here, one of the guinea pigs cheered and was immediately suppressed by the officers of the court. "As that is a rather hard word, I will just explain to you how it was done. They had a large canvas bag, which tied up at the mouth with strings. Into this they slipped the guinea pig, head first, and then sat upon it."
"I'm glad I've seen that done," thought Alice.
"I've read so often in newspapers at the end of trials there was some attempt at applause which was immediately suppressed by the officers of the court, and I never understood what it meant till now."
"If that's all you know about it, you may stand down," continued the King.
"I can't go any lower," said the Hatter. "I'm on the floor as it is."
"Then you may sit down," the King replied.
Here the other guinea pig cheered and was suppressed. "Come, that finishes the guinea pigs," thought Alice. "Now we shall get on better." "I'd rather finish my tea," said the Hatter, with an anxious look at the Queen, who was reading the list of singers.
"You may go," said the King.
And the Hatter hurriedly left the court without even waiting to put his shoes on. "And just take his head off outside," the Queen added to one of the officers, but the Hatter was out of sight before the officer could get to the door.
"Call the next witness," said the King.
The next witness was the Duchess's cook. She carried the pepper box in her hand, and Alice guessed who it was even before she got into the court by the way the people near the door began sneezing all at once.
"Give your evidence," said the King.
"Shan't," said the cook.
The king looked anxiously at the White Rabbit, who said in a low voice, "Your Majesty must cross-examine this witness."
"Well, if I must, I must," the king said with a melancholy air.
And, after folding his arms and frowning at the cook till his eyes were nearly out of sight, he said in a deep voice,
"What are tarts made of?"
"Pepper, mostly," said the cook.
"Treacle," said a sleepy voice behind her.
"Collar the Dormouse," the queen shrieked out. "Behead the Dormouse. Turn that Dormouse out of court. Suppress him. Pinch him. Off with his whiskers." For some minutes, the whole court was in confusion, getting the Dormouse turned out, and by the time they had settled down again, the cook had disappeared.
"Never mind," said the king, with an air of great relief. "Call the next witness."
And he added in an undertone to the queen,
"Really, my dear, you must cross-examine the next witness. It quite makes my forehead ache."
Alice watched the White Rabbit as he fumbled over the list, feeling very curious to see what the next witness would be like. "For they haven't got much evidence yet," she said to herself. Imagine her surprise when the White Rabbit read out, at the top of his shrill little voice, the name Alice. Chapter 12, Alice's Evidence. "Here," cried Alice, quite forgetting in the flurry of the moment how large she had grown in the last few minutes, and she jumped up in such a hurry that she tipped over the jury box with the edge of her skirt, upsetting all the jurymen up to the heads of the crowd below, and there they lay sprawling about, reminding her very much of a globe of goldfish she had accidentally upset the week before. "Oh, I beg your pardon," she exclaimed in a tone of great dismay, and began picking them up again as quickly as she could, for the accident of the goldfish kept running in her head, and she had a vague sort of idea that they must be collected at once and be put back into the jury box, or they would die.
"The trial cannot proceed," said the king in a very grave voice, "until all the jurymen are back in their proper places. All," he repeated with great emphasis, looking hard at Alice as he said so.
Alice looked at the jury box, and she saw that, in her haste, she had put the lizard in head downward, and the poor little thing was waving its tail about in a melancholy way, quite unable to move. She soon got it out again and put it right. "Not that it signifies much," she said to herself. "I should think it would be quite as much use in the trial one way up as the other." As soon as the jury had a little recovered from the shock of being upset, and their slates and pencils had been found and handed to them, they set to work very diligently to write out a history of the accident, all except the lizard, who seemed too much overcome to do anything but sit with its mouth open, gazing up into the roof of the court.
"What do you know about this business?" the king said to Alice.
"Nothing," said Alice.
"Nothing whatsoever?" persisted the king.
"Nothing whatever," said Alice.
"That's very important," the king said, turning to the jury.
They were just beginning to write this down on their slates when the White Rabbit interrupted.
"Unimportant, Your Majesty means, of course," he said in a very respectful tone, but frowning and making faces at him as he spoke.
"Unimportant, of course, I meant," the king hastily said, and went on to himself in an undertone. "Important, unimportant, unimportant, important,"
as if he were trying which word sounded best. Some of the jury wrote down important and some unimportant. Alice could see this as she was near enough to look at their slates. "But it doesn't matter a bit," she thought to herself. At this moment, the king, who had been for some time busily writing in his notebook, called out,
"Silence!" and read out from his book, "Rule 42. All persons more than a mile high leave the court." Everybody looked at Alice.
"I'm not a mile high," said Alice.
"You are," said the king.
"Nearly 2 miles high," added the queen.
"Well, I shan't go at any rate," said Alice. "Besides, that's not a regular rule. You invented it just now."
"It's the oldest rule in the book," said the king.
"Then it ought to be number 1," said Alice. The king turned pale and shut his notebook hastily.
"Consider your verdict," he said to the jury in a low, trembling voice.
"There's more evidence to come yet, please, Your Majesty," said the White Rabbit, jumping up in a great hurry. "This paper has just been picked up."
"What's in it?" said the queen.
"I haven't opened it yet," said the White Rabbit, "but it seems to be a letter written by the prisoner to somebody."
"It must have been that," said the king, "unless it was written to nobody, which isn't usual, you know."
"Who is it directed to?" said one of the jurymen.
"It isn't directed at all," said the White Rabbit. "In fact, there's nothing written on the outside." He unfolded the paper as he spoke and added, "It isn't a letter at all. It's a set of verses." "Are they in the prisoner's handwriting?" asked another of the jurymen. "No, they are not," said the White Rabbit. "And that's the queerest thing about it." The jury all looked puzzled. "He must have imitated somebody else's hand," said the king. The jury all brightened up again. "Please, Your Majesty," said the knave, "I didn't write it, and they can't prove I did. There's no name signed at the end."
"If you didn't sign it," said the king, "that only makes the matter worse. You must have meant some mischief, or else you would have signed your name like an honest man."
There was a general clapping of hands at this. It was really the first clever thing the king had said that day.
"That proves his guilt," said the queen.
"It proves nothing of the sort," said Alice. "Why, you don't even know what they're about."
"Read them," said the king.
The White Rabbit put on his spectacles. "Where shall I begin, please, Your Majesty?" he asked.
"Begin at the beginning," said the king gravely, "and go on until you come to the end, then stop."
And these were the verses that the White Rabbit read. "They told me you had been to her, and mentioned him to me to him. She gave me a good character, but said I could not swim. He sent them word I had not gone. We know it to be true. If she should push the matter on, what would become of you? I gave her one, they gave him two. You gave us three or more. They all return from him to you, though they were mine before. If I or she should chance to be involved in this affair, he trusts to you to set them free exactly as we were. My notion was that you had been, before she had this fit, an obstacle that came between him and ourselves and it. Don't let him know she liked them best, for this must ever be a secret kept from all the rest between yourself and me."
"That's the most important piece of evidence we've heard yet," said the king, rubbing his hands. "And so now let the jury."
"If any one of them can explain it," said Alice. She had grown so large in the last few minutes that she wasn't a bit afraid of interrupting him. "I'll give him sixpence. I don't believe there's an atom of meaning in it." The jury all wrote down on their slates, "She doesn't believe there's an atom of meaning in it." But none of them attempted to explain the paper.
"If there's no meaning to it," said the king, "that saves a world of trouble, you know, as we needn't try to find any. And yet I don't know," he went on, spreading out the verses on his knee and looking at them with one eye. "I seem to see some meaning in them after all. Said I could not swim. You can't swim, can you?" he added, turning to the knave.
The knave shook his head sadly. "Do I look like it?" he said, which he certainly did not, being made entirely of cardboard.
"All right, so far," said the king, and he went on muttering over the verses to himself. "We know it to be true. That's the jury, of course. I gave her one, they gave him two. Why, that must be what he did with the tarts, you know."
"But it goes, they all returned from him to you," said Alice.
"Why, there they are," said the king triumphantly, pointing to the tarts on the table. "Nothing can be clearer than that. Then again, before she had this fit, she never had fits, my dear, I think," he said to the queen.
"Never," said the queen furiously, throwing an inkstand at the lizard as she spoke. The unfortunate little Bill had left off writing his slate with one finger, as he found it made no mark, but he now hastily began again, using the ink that was trickling down his face as long as it lasted.
"Then the words don't fit you," said the king, looking round the court with a smile.
There was a dead silence.
"It's a pun," the king added in an angry tone, and everybody laughed. "Let the jury consider their verdict," the king said for about the 20th time that day.
"No, no," said the queen. "Sentence first, verdict afterwards."
"Stuff and nonsense," said Alice loudly.
"The idea of having the sentence first."
"Hold your tongue," said the queen, turning purple.
"I won't," said Alice. "Off with her head," the queen shouted at the top of her voice.
Nobody moved.
"Who cares for you?" said Alice. She had grown to her full size by this time. "You've nothing but a pack of cards." At this, the whole pack rose up into the air and came flying down upon her. She gave a little scream, half of fright and half of anger, and tried to beat them off, and found herself lying on the bank with her head in the lap of her sister, who was gently brushing away some dead leaves that had fluttered down from the trees on her face.
"Wake up, Alice dear," said her sister.
"Why, what a long sleep you've had."
"Oh, I've had such a curious dream," said Alice, and she told her sister, as well as she could remember them, all these strange adventures of hers that she must have been reading about. And when she had finished, her sister kissed her and said, "It was a curious dream, dear, certainly. But now run into your tea. It's getting late." So Alice got up and ran off, thinking while she ran, as well as she might, what a wonderful dream it had been. But her sister sat still, just as she left her, leaning her head on her hand, watching the setting sun, and thinking of little Alice and all her wonderful adventures, till she too began dreaming after a fashion, and this was her dream. First she dreamed of little Alice herself. Once again the tiny hands were clasped upon her knee, and her bright, eager eyes were looking up into hers, and she could hear the very tones of her voice, and see that queer little toss of her head to keep back the wandering hair that would always get into her eyes. And still, as she listened, or seemed to listen, the whole place around her became alive with the strange creatures of her little sister's dream. The long grass rustled at her feet as the white rabbit hurried by. The frightened mouse splashed his way through the neighboring pool. She could hear the rattle of the teacups as the March Hare and his friends shared their never-ending meal, and the shrill voice of the queen ordering off her unfortunate guest to execution. Once more, the pig baby was sneezing on the duchess's knee, while plates and dishes crashed around it. Once more, the shriek of the griffin, the squeaking of the lizard's slate pencil, and the choking of the suppressed guinea pigs, filled with air, mixed up with the distant sob of the miserable mock turtle. So she sat, with eyes closed, and half believed herself in Wonderland, though she knew she had but to open them again, and all would change to dull reality. The grass would be only rustling in the wind, and the pool rippling to the waving of the reeds, and the rattling teacups would change to tinkling sheep bells, and the queen's shrill cries to the voice of the shepherd boy, and the sneeze of the baby, the shriek of the griffin, and all the other queer noises would change, she knew, to the confused clamor of the busy farmyard, while the lowing of the cattle in the distance would take the place of the mock turtle's heavy sobs. Lastly, she pictured to herself how this same little sister of hers would, in the aftertime, be herself a grown woman, and how she would keep, through all her riper years, the simple and loving heart of her childhood, and how she would gather about her other little children and make their eyes bright and eager with many a strange tale, perhaps even with the dream of Wonderland of long ago, and how she would feel with all their simple sorrows and find pleasure in all their simple joys, remembering her own child life and the happy summer days. The end. Ah, what a fantastical, fantastical story that's been these last several weeks as we have read Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll as a library staff to you. The book was originally published in 1865, and it is known as a classic and perfect example of the genre known as literary nonsense. And if you've been tuning in, you know that there has been a lot of silliness and nonsense, and so that definitely is true. If you've missed any of these episodes, if tonight was the first time you were tuning in, be sure to go back on KRBD's website, krbd.org, and find our past episodes where we have read the earlier chapters and the beginning of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, and we'll get you completely caught up there. But I'd also like to share, since we have a little bit of time left, some wonderful poetry that was written pre-20th century by Lewis Carroll. Several books exist containing his poetry. Much of it is from his books that he's written where poems might be contained within. But here are a few of his standalone poems that I thought were just especially beautiful. This first poem is called Faces in the Fire. And as we all
start to use our wood stoves and fireplaces more during these colder months. This one seems especially fitting for this time of year. So here's Faces in the Fire by Lewis Carroll again. The night creeps onward, sad and slow, in these red embers' dying glow. The forms of fancy come and go. An island farm, broad seas of corn, stirred by the wandering breath of morn, the happy spot where I was born. The picture fadeth in its place, amid the glow I seem to trace, the shifting semblance of a face. 'Tis now a childish form, red lips for kisses pouted warm, and elf locks tangled in the storm. 'Tis now a grave and gentle maid, at her own beauty half afraid, shrinking and willing to be stayed. Oh, time was young and life was warm when first I saw that fairy form, her dark hair tossing in the storm. And fast and free these pulses played when last I met that gentle maid, when last her hand in mine was laid. Those locks of jet are turned to gray, and she is strange and far away, that might have been mine own today. That might have been mine own, my dear, through many and many a happy year, that might have sat beside me here. I, changeless through the changing scene, the ghostly whisper rings between the dark refrain of might have been. The race is o'er, I might have run, the deeds are past, I might have done, and sere the wreath, I might have won. Sunk is the last faint flickering blaze, the vision of departed days is vanished even as I gaze. The pictures with their ruddy light are changed to dust and ashes white, and I am left alone with night. That was published first in January 1860. Our next poem, it reminds me very much of, I don't know if there's any other Anne of Green Gables fans out there, but when I read this, I immediately thought of The Lady of Shalott and Anne Shirley reciting that beautiful, very dramatic, pensive poetry. So this next one is called The Willow Tree, and you'll have to tell me if you see me around if this also reminds you a bit of some an Anne Shirleyism. So here's The Willow Tree by Lewis Carroll. The morn was bright, the steeds were light, the wedding guests were gay. Young Ellen stood within the wood and watched them pass away. She scarcely saw the gallant train, the teardrop dimmed her ease. Unheard the maiden did complain beneath the willow tree. O Robin, thou didst love me well, till on a bitter day she came, the Lady Isabel, and stole thy heart away. My tears are vain, I live again in days that used to be, when I could meet thy welcome feet beneath the willow tree. O willow gray, I must not stay till spring renew thy leaf, but I will hide myself away and nurse a lonely grief. It shall not dim life's joy for him, my tears he shall not see. While he is by, I'll come not nigh my weeping willow tree. But when I die, oh, let me lie beneath thy loving shade, that he may loiter careless by where I am lowly laid, and let the white, white marble tell, if he should stoop to see, here lies a maid that loved thee well beneath the willow tree. That was written in 1859, and my goodness, I feel like I almost need to put in a background there of some violin or perhaps some warbling operatic music. This next poem, is also a beautiful Lewis Carroll piece. It was written in March 16th, 1853 is the date that it was published, and this next piece is called Solitude. I love the stillness of the wood.
I love the music of the rill. I love to couch in pensive mood upon some silent hill. Scarce heard beneath yon arching trees, the silver-crested ripples pass, and like a mimic brook, the breeze whispers among the grass. Here from the world I win release, nor scorn of men, nor footstep rude, break in to mar the holy peace of this great solitude. Here may the silent tears I weep lull the vexed spirit into rest, as infants sob themselves to sleep upon a mother's breast. But when the bitter hour is gone, and the keen throbbing pangs are still, O sweetest then to couch alone upon some silent hill, to live in joys that once have been, to put the cold world out of sight, and deck life's drear and barren scene with hues of rainbow light. For what to man the gift of breath, if sorrow be his lot below, if all the day that ends in death be dark with clouds of woe? Shall the transport of an hour repay long years of sore distress? The fragrance of a lonely flower make glad the wilderness? Ye golden hours of life's young spring, of innocence, of love and truth, bright beyond all imagining, thou fairy dream of youth. I'd give all wealth that years have piled, the slow result of life's decay, to be once more a little child for one bright summer day. And again, that was written in 1853. So many of these, all of these works really that were written so long ago, but really speak such truth still. But you've been listening to Reading the Classics. We've been doing several weeks of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. We finished that story this evening. We've just finished up with some poetry by Mr. Carroll. And so I hope you've enjoyed these last several weeks. You're actually going to be in for a great treat in the coming weeks. We will be reading The Wizard of Oz as a staff. And so we're very excited about that. And we hope that you likewise enjoy those readings. Like I've mentioned, if you miss any piece of the reading, be sure to tune into KRBD's website. They have posted all of our Reading the Classics episodes right to very nearly the beginning, I believe. And so if you're out in the boat or you're on a road trip, such as that may be here on this island, and you're just looking for some short stories, or in this case, a longer reading of Alice in Wonderland, be sure to check out KRBD's website, because there's really great tales there from the public domain, which means they can now freely be read without fear of infringing upon an important copyright, which we want to be very careful about, of course. So be sure to check that out on KRBD's website. Thanks so much for tuning in this evening. Be sure to tune in next week, next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. when we will be starting our reading of The Wizard of Oz. We just delight in reading these stories to you and look forward to meeting here again next week. You have been listening to KRBD Ketchikan.